from the time that they pronounced me dead was a good 45 minutes.
They cut my clothes and then they paddled my heart, because my heart had stopped. And I could see people screaming and crying, but I didn't realize that was actually my physical body because I was somewhere else.
The only thing that I could feel, if you could imagine, absolute love and peace. There wasn't anything else to be felt.
I was greeted by people I'd known in the past.
I'm back home again.
Incredibly safe and felt at home.
Welcome, welcome to Round Trip Death, everybody. And I'd like to welcome our special guest, Lorelei Drock. How are you this morning?
I'm doing good. Thank you so much.
I know it's afternoon for you. Hey, we're going to be talking about multiple near-death experiences that you have had. So there's a little hint for the listeners of what there is to come. I'd like to take just a brief 1 minute before we start and have you tell us a little bit about you. Who is Lorelei? What do you do? Tell us anything you feel like sharing.
Oh, well, thank you. I was born in the Midwest on a large farm, which plays into my first death experience. I'm a mother of three, and a strange thing about me is my whole family is experiencers. So there's a lot of support that way because we've all had various experiences and near-death experiences. From those, all my clear abilities are very wide open. So I do a lot of session work with people, helping them find self. I always say I'm a remembrance guide. I'm not a healer. I just help you remember who you are and your ability to heal yourself. And so I have all those labels. I do not like labels. That's another thing about me, but you know, like psychic mediumship, I'm a medical intuitive, and all those different healer labels you can throw out there.
Did any of those start before your experiences? Of course, the first one, you were only 7 years old, so you probably don't remember.
I know my mother used to say, even from the time I could first talk, that I was a very old soul. I just understood things I shouldn't for my age, and just a keen empathy, you know, that others didn't seem to quite have. So I am not sure on that either, like you said, because it was at seven. I know I had prophetic dreams, but I don't know if they started before or after. I'm pretty sure it was after.
I'm curious about your family, and I wasn't expecting to talk about this, but there are so many people that have NDEs that feel like they can't talk to anybody. You know, what we had someone on the show recently who even, I certainly will not name names, but he didn't tell his wife that he was going to be on the show because she's like, doesn't believe it, thinks it sounds crazy. And it's really hard for him that he cannot talk to the most important person in his life about it. So what's your family like? Is this a very open topic at the dinner table?
I get asked that even by my friends, like, how does a family like yours even go out in public? Because we're all so in tune and psychic and all that other labels, right? You know, and it was difficult for a while, I will say this, because even though my husband's had various experiences, he's very scientific, genius IQ, you know, like everything has an answer. And his theory is, you know, magic is just science we haven't figured out yet. Like all of this is science, which, you know, quantum physics is starting to prove some of this. So until he started having some major experiences and stuff within the last few years, it was a little more hard to bring up. So me and my daughters would talk about things. And then recently, you know, my son always kind of understood, but he would tease me about the tinfoil hat and stuff. But then he's had some profound experiences within the last few years. So now I'm the one he comes to because he's having major experiences. And I know, like, him and my daughter's had like two or three NDEs already. I think my son did it at birth. My other daughter's had two. And my husband, I think, has had three. I'm just saying, like, you wouldn't believe, you know, that people are like, how is that possible? Your whole family. But just various things that have happened along our life path. And I think it was to accelerate our awareness together.
It also sounds like you're all very accident prone.
Well, some were medical procedures that went wrong and various things.
Sure. Yes.
And my two children was like a birth experience. I had very difficult births. They almost didn't make it. So,
All right. Let's start with NDE number one. You were 7 years old. What was going on? Give me a little background.
We lived on 191 acres in rural Wisconsin, and it used to be a quarry, so it had five large ponds, and this was a drowning experience. My aunt and uncle lived across on the farm across the street, and they had come over, and it was late afternoon. So anyway, my brother wanted to go check. Must have been spring, so he wanted to check if the bluegills were spawning and maybe fish. So since my mom was cooking and I was the only other one child, they're like, take your sister with. And so, yeah, so we ended up going down to the ponds, walking down there. And that led into my near-death experience because I didn't know how to swim.
So did you fall in or what happened?
Yeah. How it went was we went to the third and fourth pond, which in the spring are very connected because when the ice melts, you know, the water's higher. So they stopped off at the first entrance to check the bluegills. My uncle and my brother did. I asked my aunt if we could go on to the next one because I wanted to look out into what we called the swim hole. It was like 30 foot deep. And there was a smaller pond besides that where in the spring all the frogs laid tadpoles and stuff because I used to like to raise tadpoles. So I had her take me over there. She also couldn't swim, which is of note. And so she was kind of afraid of water. So she stayed up on the bank and I walked down the bank and onto this makeshift pier that my family had built with pallets and posts. And I went out there and like the afternoon sun, you know how it hits across the water. It was very hypnotizing. So I was on the left side right where the sun was hitting and I was starting to feel a little woozy. So I went to the other side where I was out of the sun and couldn't see the rippling of the water. And at that time is when she asked, you know, are you going to be okay? I want to go check on your uncle. She had kind of like separation anxiety from him. And I'm like, oh, yeah. And we were like 7 years old and she left you alone. But like with farm kids, we had more responsibility. Like I said, I was always an old soul. Nobody ever like worried about me that way. I'd spend all day out in the woods. You know, it's just how we were raised. She went to go do that. And my last conscious memory is like her walking away asking if I would be okay. Next thing I knew, literally, I was underwater with the air bubbles, like screaming in the air bubbles coming up in front of my face. And that's when I was like, oh, my God, that's my air. And then I'm like, hold on, I'm underwater. I can't breathe in, you know. And then I'm like, oh, my God, if I breathe in, I'm going to die. And as soon as I had the thought of death, I was out of my body. I'm just out watching it sink and watching the interplay all take place between my family. I think they must have heard me fall in. But this is where I connected my consciousness to each family member. So the first consciousness that I recall connecting with was my brother. And he was wondering if he could run to me faster or swim that area faster. And I was laughing because I was like, I had no concern for my body. And I was laughing going, you can't do either very fast, you know. So I was just sitting there laughing. But then next thing I switched to my uncle's consciousness and he was wondering, you know, what happened and why is she leaving? You know, they're going to blame us. If, you know, what if she doesn't make it? All of these things. And then my aunt, you know, she was having similar thoughts, but also like, I'm closest. How do I get to her? If I don't do this right, we're both going to drown, you know? So she decided she could hang on to like the post and try to reach me and like kind of scoop me in, you know, like see if she could grab my hair or my hand or something to kind of pull me up. And so then, like I said, they were all running towards me. So as soon as I checked on them, I went like what I would call like higher, like I was way up so I could see for miles this time. And that's when I connected with my mother's consciousness back at home because that pond to there is probably another mile, right? So and she was cooking. She was wondering if we caught anything. I think she was chopping up vegetables for chili. And so as soon as I checked on her, I completely left what I call the earth venue. And I was what this like, only I can describe as like rolling mist, like clouds. And I could tell I didn't have a body and this guy didn't have a body, but I could tell there was some like a presence with me to my left. And I felt like ant size, you know, and we're looking up at this huge archway up also to the left that felt way up above us. And there was this light emanating from this archway that is indescribable in the sense it was like white to yellow, you know, to amber to orange as it expanded, but it literally felt like it completely encompassed the whole space. And the most, you know, like LED watts in your eyes. And I remember thinking like, this should hurt to look at, you know, like it felt like looking at the sun up close. And there was the most overwhelming love, you know, it's like parental love times a thousand. There's just not human words for it, really. I can't. It was like, literally, I say this now, but it's kind of ironic in the wording of like the weight of the world was off of you. Like you just felt such immense peace, freedom, love. And there happened, you know, there was like a being. I knew there was a being in the center of this light. Like it must, I feel like the light was emanating from it possibly or through whatever this archway led to. And I remember having this conversation, you know, about my life and being shown things, but I don't remember what they were. But I remember having this huge argument that felt like it lasted like eternities, like time is different there anyway. But I was arguing. I'm like, no, you can't make me go back. I'm not going back to that. There's no way. I'm not going to. This is, you know, and it, like I said, that felt like it went on forever. But then it was like, I was related to the Truman Show because that's the only way I can. It was like, it's like a big booming voice coming over the PA. And it says, it was male and authoritative. And it says, you must go back. You have more to do. And something in me knew, like, you don't argue with this voice. Like, wow. That's the end of it. And I, like I said, I felt so small. But this is the funny part. Like, your personality doesn't change. And I'm just like, I've always been this way. Like, you can't tell me what to do. So I was like, okay, well, you can make me go back to my body, but you can't make me go in it. You can make me go back to Earth, but I'm not getting in there. I distinctly remember that. So the next thing I knew, I was like next to my body. And I'm with my body and I'm watching him, you know, carry it up there and lay it on its side. There was no ill effects. I don't remember coughing up any blood or anything. I just was like disassociative in the sense that like, I don't even think I spoke till the next day. And that's when I confronted my family about their thoughts while I was underwater. But even for like the year after, I think it took me at least a year before like I felt embodied. Like I was not, I was with it, but I wasn't with it, if that makes sense.
That's so interesting. Let me interject a couple of things because you went very fast through all this. You briefly mentioned a guide. Can you tell me anything about the guide?
Not at all. I just sensed a presence that was with me. Like you would present something to royalty or something. Like you'd have the page bring somebody up. That's what it felt like. Like I just knew I was safe with this being and that, you know, it was somehow like responsible for me, like presenting me like, okay, well, here she is, you know.
So then in this super bright archway, the being that you saw or heard or both there, that was a different being than your guide?
Yes, and a different one than told me I had to go back. I mean, this one was telling me I had to go back and making me aware of like the things I chose to do and everything. But so it was three distinct different energies, beings.
I'm sorry, I got two. Who was the third one?
One was the guide. One was the original one that was showing me my life and all of the things.
Okay.
And that I was arguing with about returning. Third one was this demanding male presence that told me to return. Like, we've had enough. You're going back.
You've had a long time to think about this. Who do you think the demanding male presence was?
I honestly cannot say I'm sure. Like, I kind of understand now through all of my different experience that light and that person showing me my life was my like higher self, you know, or whatever you want to call it, my oversoul, whatever the totality of me was that light. But as far as that being, I've had a lot of other experiences where literally seeing like screens and watching things play out like this Truman Show kind of, where it's all these screens and different aspects of lives in my life. So I almost feel like if I were to say that, I would say it was like more like the controller, the person that knew all the plan. Like, this is the divine plan. You need to go back. Just
sure.
Stop. We're wasting our time here. So, I mean, some people may want to throw a label like God, but the God source of my understanding is a lot more removed from this process.
One thing I find interesting here is that most people, and a lot of people, of course, are given a choice. You can go back or you can stay. Here's some ideas of what you want to think about to help you make your choice. Other people are like you, and they're just like, no, 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 no. I'm not going back. But then they're usually talked into it. So, you know, you need to go back because X, Y, Z, and then they decide, okay, I'll go even though I don't really want to. But it sounds like you never got to that point. You had no choice. You just were, you had to.
I was so young, and I know that, like, I had things to do, but I knew that they would be very difficult. I mean, that was the sense I got, like, oh, God, I don't want to go through that. What did I sign up for? It's harder than you think, you know? So I think that was part of it. You know, my later experiences, you know, you and I have touched base on that, that I definitely chose and was given choices. But for this one, I think I was so young that I hadn't really done any of the things that I was going to. And this particular experience happened right around either before or right after the death of my grandfather. And I think it was partly tied to that because I was so close to him. He was the only supportive person in my life at that time, that it might have been to help that process as well, you know, to understand sure. and not be as affected. It still affected me greatly. I had to go to counseling, you know, but I'm just saying it was, so I think it was partly in relation to that as well.
Just a brief interruption here to mention our sponsor, Smart Labels. If fall season means you're putting away summer clothes and toys, there's a product that helps you keep it all organized. Get the Smart Labels and stick their QR codes on all your storage bins. Scan in the app, add names, descriptions, even pictures. Then months down the road, when you're looking for that thing that you know you stored somewhere, you can just search in the app and it'll tell you where you put it. Seriously, it's organizing magic. Click on over to Amazon, search for Smart Labels, that's one word, Smart Labels, and get organized today. Now, back to the guest. I also want to talk more about the, as you put it, overwhelming love that you felt. But if that's going to come up in some of your other experiences that we'll talk about in a minute, no? Well, then let's talk about it now. I know you said there weren't words for it. Try a little harder.
Try a little harder.
I'm going to open up a thesaurus here. Try to explain what that felt like.
You know, I do say it's almost like a mother's love in that sense, but amplified so beyond that. Like it feels like the most like acceptance. It feels like you are completely seen and known. You know, I've had further experiences, so I know that I'm living multiple lives and variations and consciousness at once. And it's like you're seen in your whole totality. Everything that you judged about yourself, everything that you've ever been, acted on, every emotion you've ever known, everything is completely accepted, completely understood, completely known. Like there is nothing hidden. You are in your complete authenticity as a being, but completely at one with this love and knowing you are this love and that there is nothing outside that exists but this love. I'm trying to think if there's anything earthly other than being, you know, giving birth to a child that I could possibly compare it to. And even that's so minor. It's like this authentic purity of consciousness, like you understand everything in that moment and nothing matters in the sense of how all the worries that we have and the burdens that we have on earth of like, I have to go to work, I have to pay something or I won't be able to survive, I won't be able to have a roof over my head or food in my stomach or any of those things. You realize none of that mattered. It was all a living nightmare, you might call it. It was a dream. I've had further experiences where they literally tell me this is a dream, a simulation, a manifestation of thought and emotion playing out in physical matter. So, you know, when you're able to leave something like that and know all of it was over in a blink of an eye, it was only not even a blink of an eye of your totality, all of that is stripped away. So you just understand. And all of that leaving you, you're at this complete peace and you are that pure love because everything has been stripped away but that love, because that's really what you are. And I guess that's the most I can explain it, I think.
That must have made you different than all the other seven-year-olds out there. Growing up for you must have been different, and I hope in a really good way, than most kids. Did it remove things like your fear of death?
Yeah, like I said to my mom the next day, and you know, like, I know I died, this is what happened. And, you know, I told my brother his thoughts and he freaked out. Like, there was no way. That's when he went and ran, got my mom, like, something happened to her. But I mean, in general, kids would always say, you're weird, but in a good way. Because I knew things, I knew their emotion, I knew things. After the seven-year-old experience, like, I lived in deja vu, like, for years and years and years. Like, a thought would trigger, and then I'd see, like, the next 10 minutes play out, right? That always made me knew that I was still on the path that I had chosen. With that in mind, I always knew, like, who was going to betray me, or, you know, these different things. I had an inner knowing about people. I could tell you in a few minutes what, you know, what their deal was and what their wounds were. So, yeah, it made it kind of difficult in some ways, because I literally could sense when people were prepared to die. Like, usually 2 weeks before, they would start to look like melting wax dummies as their soul energy would leave their body. Later years, like in my later 20s, you know, I could tell when people were going to be born. Like, within a year, you're going to have a daughter, you know. But back as a seven-year-old, you know, 7 to 12, that was very hard. And I would get very ill. And there was a certain weird pain I'd get in, like, my stomach that told me somebody was about to leave the venue. And that was something that kind of frightened me, obviously, as a seven-year-old, and seeing that as a seven-year-old. So that's something I kind of asked them, like, this is not what I want to know. You can bring me anything positive, but I don't want these things that are too traumatic for me.
Interesting.
But it did make my family different towards me, I will say that. It made it harder. They felt judged because they were a farming and hunting family. And when I came back, you know, even before I take this experience, I just didn't resonate with that. But it was very profoundly obvious afterwards. And because I knew their thoughts and different things, I always played, my mother called it the devil's advocate. I don't like that term, but like I could say, well, this is how they're seeing it, and this is how they're experiencing it. They don't mean to be this way. So like I would constantly do that, and it drove everybody. I learned discernment after a while. My mother used to say I was tactlessly honest, because I could literally say, I'd be like, you lie, because I could tell when people were lying. You know, it was bad. It didn't make life easy.
I think you summarized it good a minute ago when you said weird in a good way.
Yes.
Okay, let's fast forward to experience number two. Correct me if I have any of this wrong, but you're an adult now. You're undergoing a medical procedure. You've had anesthesia. And were you allergic to the anesthesia, or did they just give you too much?
They gave me too much, and I didn't realize I had issues with anemia at that time. And so I bled out. I was bleeding out. It was at the hospital that I worked for. So, you know, the doctor was very angry with me. Like, why'd you wait on having the DNC? And I wanted off the meds the next day because I felt perfectly fine. And I argued with him. He's like, I almost lost you last night. That's another reason I knew I almost died. He goes, you can stop bleeding again to death. You know, I'm like, no, I'm fine. Like, I knew I was fine. I knew I went home for healing. This one was not a profound experience like the other one. My grandmother had come to me. She had told me that this was my first pregnancy that I was aware of. And we had heard the baby's heartbeat and everything. I was about 3 months along. And she came to me and said, you know, this baby is not yours to keep. There will be more.
This is prior to the DNC?
Yes. Yes. Like 2 weeks before, she had come to me. And then she showed me the date on the calendar. This was a visitation. And everything played out that way. That night, I was babysitting a bunch of my nephews and cousins while their parents were out, me and my husband were, and I started bleeding really heavily in severe pain. And we called my mom, and like they took me to the ER. They determined I needed an emergency DNC, and I stopped breathing. I was intubated and given a ton of meds because I was bleeding out. But there, I went home for healing so that I could have more children. I had this whole prophetic vision in my early 20s. About my first child and things that would happen to him. So like I knew I was supposed to have children. That was my understanding, you know, and my remembrance from later experiences, you know, like I just went home and there was these beings around me that did this healing. And it kind of was confirmed by the doctor as well, because he said my body, when they did the autopsy or whatever you want to call that, they said that like the systems on the baby, her bodily systems did not interconnect. They said it was my body's way of learning how to make a baby, and that if I wanted another baby, I had to have one right away. And I did. I had a rainbow baby. But yeah, so that was that experience. And it was so weird because I was okay with it. And I even went on because I already had a party scheduled that night and everything else. And I understood. I was the one consoling everyone else, saying, it's fine. This was supposed to happen. This is part of the plan.
All right. Let's go on to the next one. This one's a little more profound, isn't it?
My third one is, I lost blood flow to my brain during an experience because I was diagnosed with a lot of autoimmune and autonomic nervous issues. And I'd lost blood flow to my brain. And I was in the living room with my husband and my daughter. And I was talking to my husband. And anyway, I'm like, I don't feel right. There's something wrong, you know. And I started backing up. And I lost consciousness. But he said I continued to back up. And then I collapsed against the door, but I hit the door, the back of my head hit the door jamb. And he said, I seizured and slumped over and stopped breathing. But I was like instantly gone. I was in this area I call like Heaven City. It's almost like they use this mist to black out everything else. But I remember this white mist again when I was on like this, I would say granite park bench. And I was with this being who looked like my mother, but I instantly like, I knew it wasn't her energy. I was very aware of these things. The being was very contrite, you know, and like almost surprised that I recognized it wasn't actually her, and said like telepathically, like it was for your benefit. We want to, you know, keep you calm. And this one, I did see like her body and mine only in the sense I remember her like rubbing my knee. We were both sitting on this park bench and she was rubbing my knee and she was like, you know, it's okay. You know, you can stay. You've done enough. You know, you've put in a positive balance. It's kind of how I understood it. You don't have to go back. You've done enough now. And I instantly was like, no, my daughter needs me. I have to go back. And this was through a whole period of remembrance that in another lifetime, I had died on her same soul. We had incarnated in like the 1800s England. And I was a cobbler. There's this whole long story to this. But I had died in my wife's arms with her at my feet at the same age. And she has past life memories of trying to survive and live on the wharf after I had died because I was the only, you know, means in that time period of income. So I made the decision that I wasn't going to leave her and do the same soul trauma that I did, you know, in that life. I wasn't going to leave her again at this age. So I chose to go back. But what's profound about the experience in the past life remembrance is within this, what happened was, which I think is important to share. As this cobbler, my shop was in town and I was walking back over this cobblestone bridge and it was like dusk or a little darker. And two robbers came at me because they wanted my coin purse because they saw me close shop, right? They had been watching me or something. They had planned it. And the one had like a little musket handheld type gun on me and demanded my coin purse. So I gave it to him, but he got greedy. Then he wanted like my pocket watch, I remember. And his companion started freaking out like, no, we got enough. You know, it was trying to grab at him. Well, my family's a gun family. If you know anything about those old muskets and everything, that's hair trigger. It went off and it shot me right under the right rib. And then they were freaking out and being apologetic and like ran off. And I made my way home and into my home and collapsed in my wife's arms and passed away. I remember saying I was so sorry and that I loved them. But that always makes me very emotional, excuse me. But when I came into this particular life, I had this pain ever since childhood. I had all sorts of doctor visits and tests and they couldn't figure out what this pain was, same spot. And through this experiences and understanding why it happened and that how and feeling their emotions and their sorrow for doing it, I was able to release that. And I didn't have that pain after that.
Okay. I'm just trying to keep up. Next experience I titled here in my notes, reverse shared death experience.
Yeah.
Explain what in the world that means.
Well, in that particular experience, I'm the one that experienced death, but I had two friends that validated it and experienced parts of it with me.
How did you die this time?
I had some autonomic nervous system issues leading up to it where my body would either freeze up or I would momentarily not be able to swallow or not be able to breathe, like the week leading up to this. And I didn't feel very well when I went to bed that night. I said, I feel off. Something's not right. Well, I stopped breathing in my sleep that.
Okay. So then what happened? Tell us about the shared death.
Within this experience, my husband and my daughter, who I know are part of what people might call a soul group of my, were present, but they were off to like the left side. In front of me was what I call my, some people might call it twin soul or soulmate. He was in front of me. I know him in this lifetime. And then my other friend was over here. And I remember those two, they were all in white. They looked similar to how they do here. And it was simultaneously that I was having these conversations with my twin flame and my friend. My first conscious thing was like I said, being in this white mist again, nothing else, just this mist that seemed to go on forever. I call that the quantum space now, but, and I could sense that there were other beings, I think other parts of my soul family, but they weren't in physical form because I didn't recognize their energy kind of thing. So she is over here telling me like, if I want that body, I need to get white back in it now. While he's giving me this whole, I call it being called to the principal's office, lecture about at my level of light, I have to be mindful of what I'm creating, you know, with thoughts, emotions, everything. So I had this whole knowing and download of all this stuff regarding how those things are created that we can maybe get into. But I was getting yelled at. And I told him, I said, like, what do you want from me? Human me is a ditz. I forget these things the minute I'm in a physical body. I remember saying something along those lines. But the conversation with my other friend that was simultaneously was that she was saying, you know, if you want that body, you have to get back into it now. And I remember asking her how, and she's like, you need to swallow. And then I asked, and then I'm like, how do you start this thing? We were referring to it as a vehicle, like to experience Earth. I'm like, how do you start this thing? And that's when she said to swallow. And then I'm like, and the second thing, I'll go over the physical manifestation because I was aware of my body from this point. So once I swallowed, I took this huge gasp of air in, and then it felt like a horse kick to the inside of my chest as my heart started. It hurt so bad, but not as bad as what happened next, because then once I did that, they were like, okay, now check your body. Can you feel anything? I'm like, I can't feel nothing. I don't feel anything. So then they're like, you need to do a systems check. They literally called it a systems check. And I understood it. Like, there was parts of me that were like more of like the earthly conscious and the spirit conscious. And so I knew to move my energy, like starting at my feet. And as I did that, literally all my nerves came online. Can you imagine like, you know how when your hand falls asleep or you get that tingle in your elbow amplified through your whole body? It was the most horrendous pain I have ever felt, more than my 27 hours of labor. For real. As those all like became alive again. And my body shook for a good 20 minutes. I'm a medical assistant. To me, I would call it shock. I don't know, but I literally shook for 20 minutes after as I got back into my body. That's the whole play out, other than, like I said, the conversations that I had. But I remember there was like this test with my twin soul. And I remember them telling me there would be a test, but I didn't remember parts of this test. Well, the next day he contacted me saying, you know, because he's really sensitive to my energy. If I'm wounded, if where I am, he's like, you weren't there. You completely disappeared. He's like, I thought you died. He's like, and there was this whole thing. He's like, I had to do some test where I had to drink of your body and you had to give of yourself in order to do this whole thing. He had all these memories of it. And I had different knowings of it. So that I was like, holy shit, that really did happen kind of thing. Like, what? And then my other friend called me and she's like, yeah. She's like, I had this whole vision and I was over your bed and you were laying dead in it. She's like, what happened? And I'm like, oh my God, you know. So I knew, you know, that this had really happened. Not that I had a question of it because I physically felt it, but you know, it just cemented it. And I was really, really, that one took a long time. I noticed the progression through my NDEs. It took longer and longer to integrate, and it was more traumatic in the sense of, it's like the more you have to lose, the more traumatic it is. Like, you know, when I was little, I had not, you know, I hadn't lived a life. It didn't affect the ripple of my existence. But the longer you live, the more souls and the more life paths you affect. So the more your choices, whether to stay or go or things you do affect that ripple, you know? And so I was like, it was more profound that, you know, I'd had that experience.
How long do you think you would stop breathing for?
Well, the urgency that like my body wouldn't last much longer, that I had to get in it, tells me it had to be a while. And the fact that I remember my jaw being wide open, I remember my mouth being so dry, and all of those things that's kind of traumatic for me to remember, because that's my mother when I found her dead was like that, you know? So it very much triggered that memory, like kind of creeps me. So I knew I had possibly been gone a while. Especially how much it hurt to try to bring it.
Well, yeah, and that's what I was thinking about. I mean, it almost sounded like you'd been electrocuted or something, the kind of pain and sort of zapping nerve pain that you were having. But I think
it was systemic. It was, yeah.
Yeah. I think that the moment that someone stops breathing, their heart stops, whatever, the body, the physical body starts degrading. So it would make sense that if you felt like you were gone for a while in physical terms, that there would have to be something to go through as far as, I hate to call it a jump starting, because you know, it wasn't really jump starting your body, but if there had been even a few minutes of degradation, you have to overcome that.
I think that's why I was so painful.
Well, yeah. And pain is very normal for that kind of thing. I mean, I've interviewed people that have been gone for, you know, pretty much documented for 45 minutes, hour and a half. Wow, it's rough coming back after that kind of thing. Body's in bad shape. Of course, it was in bad shape to get them dead in the first place. But then the longer it goes on, the harder it is to come back.
We have a whole bunch more to talk about with Lorelei, including her experience in the void, in fact, a dark void and a light void. So we're going to go ahead and separate this into two parts. Part two will be coming out later this week. If you want to be alerted to any time that part two or any other new episodes come out, go on over to roundtripdeath.com, sign up for the email newsletter, and you'll get those alerts. Until then, I wish you every good thing that you're looking for in this life and the next.